This is Space Time Series 27, Episode 50, for broadcast on the 24th of April, 2024. Coming up on Space Time, NASA's confirmed that it will be sending a rotocopter mission to the organically rich Saturnian world of Titan. Meanwhile, the space agency's been forced to say goodbye for now to its Mars Ingenuity helicopter. And as global tensions increase, South Korea launches a new spy satellite to keep an eye on Pyongyang. All that and more coming up on Space Time.
Welcome to Space Time with Stuart Gary.
NASA's confirmed that it will be sending a rotocopter mission to the organically rich Saturnian world of Titan. The decision allows the mission, called Dragonfly, to progress to the completion of the final design, followed by the construction and testing of a spacecraft and science instruments. Nikki Fox, from NASA's Science Mission Directorate at NASA headquarters, says exploring Saturn's moon Titan will be pushing the boundaries of what we can now do with rotorcraft beyond the Earth. In early 2023, the mission successfully passed all the criteria of its preliminary design review. At that time, however, the mission was asked to develop an updated budget and schedule in order to fit into the current funding environment. This updated plan was presented and conditionally approved in November, pending the outcome of the fiscal year 2025 budget process. In the meantime, the mission was authorized to proceed with work on final mission design and fabrication to ensure that the project stayed on schedule. With the release of the President's Fiscal Year 2025 budget request, Dragonfly is now confirmed with a total life cycle cost of $3.35 billion and a launch date of July 2028. The rotorcraft is targeted to arrive at Titan in 2034. Titan is the largest moon of Saturn and the second largest moon in the solar system. It's the only moon known to have an atmosphere denser than the Earth's atmosphere. Titan's also the only known world other than Earth where clouds rain down onto the ground, forming streams and rivers, which then flow into lakes and seas. But unlike the Earth, where the rain is liquid water, on Titan it's so cold it rains liquid ethane and methane. In fact, Titan's so cold, water on this frigid world is frozen solid, forming bedrock. The only spacecraft to have visited the surface of Titan was the joint NASA-ESA Cassini-Huygens lander. It touched down on the 5,150-kilometer-wide moon on January the 14th, 2005. Instruments on board the lander described the surface as feeling like cold, wet sand. Huygens remained operational for less than a day. On the other hand, Dragonfly will visit dozens of promising locations on Titan, looking for prebiotic chemical processes which were common on both Titan and the early Earth before life developed on this planet. The Dragonfly project follows on from the highly successful Mars Ingenuity helicopter, which wrapped up its mission to the Red Planet earlier this year. Unlike Ingenuity, which was simply designed as a technology demonstrator, Dragon will be a fully-fledged flying science platform. The rotocopter will have 8 rotors and fly like a large drone. This report from NASA TV.
NASA is pushing the boundaries of human knowledge and expanding the limits of technology. I am proud to announce that our next New Frontiers mission, Dragonfly, will explore Saturn's largest moon, Titan. Dragonfly will be the first drone lander with the capability to fly over 100 miles through Titan's thick atmosphere. Titan is unlike any other place in our solar system and the most comparable to early Earth. The instruments on board will help us investigate organic chemistry and search for chemical signatures of past or even present life.
So we have on Titan opportunity to observe the processes that were present on early Earth when life began to form, and possibly even conditions that may be able to harbor life today.
One of the things that is particularly exciting about this mission is that we can do the very detailed chemical measurements, but be able to put them in the context of Titan as a system.
It's the science that really motivates us to do this exciting and difficult mission.
Saturn's largest moon, Titan, has a thick atmosphere and a frozen surface rich in organic molecules. In 2034, Dragonfly will arrive at Titan and study its chemical makeup. Dragonfly is a rotorcraft designed to visit multiple sites across the moon's varied terrain. At each new landing site on Titan's surface, Dragonfly uses a pulsed neutron generator and onboard gamma ray sensor to detect key elements such as carbon and hydrogen in organic materials or oxygen in water ice. Dragonfly determines if there are well-defined layers of these materials just below the lander. For a closer inspection, Dragonfly uses its drill to generate tailings from Titan's hard, frozen surface. These surface samples can then be ingested through the pneumatic system, carried with Titan air into the chilled sample lines into the sample collection carousel. One of the carousel sample cups is placed in a pneumatic port. The cup captures the surface material from the cold air stream and transfers it to the chemical laboratory for measurement. Pulses from a laser release large organic molecules from the surface sample for analysis in the mass spectrometer. The mass spectrometer sorts molecules by mass and measures diagnostic fragments that tell Dragonfly the kinds of chemical components that are present in the surface and whether there are molecules of prebiotic interest. For those potential prebiotic samples, a new cup is placed into an oven and heated to release molecules into a gas chromatograph, where they are sorted for size and type before entering the mass spectrometer. This advanced separation of organic components includes isolating molecules with the same formula but different chiral arrangements, or handedness. Having a preference for one handedness over another is a key biosignature for life on Earth. When the chemical analysis is complete, Dragonfly may choose to take another surface sample or find a new location on Titan to investigate.
This is Space Time. Still to come, NASA says goodbye for now to its Mars Ingenuity helicopter. And as the world continues to build up for what looks like it could be a major war, South Korea launches a new spy satellite to keep an eye on its pesky neighbor to the north. All that and more still to come on Space Time. NASA's scientists have said a tearful goodbye for now to their intrepid little Mars Ingenuity helicopter, which was grounded in January following rotor damage while flying over the red planet's Jezero crater. The final downlink shift by the Ingenuity team was a time to reflect on a highly successful mission and to prepare the first aircraft to fly on another world for a new role. The scientists and engineers who have been working with the tiny 1.8-kilogram tissue box-sized rotorcopter assembled for one last time in the control room of the agency's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, in order to monitor a final transmission from the history-making helicopter. While the mission officially ended on January the 25th, Ingenuity has remained in communication with the agency's Perseverance Mars rover, which has been serving as a relay base for the chopper. This final transmission, received through the antennas of NASA's Deep Space Network, marked the last time that mission managers would be working together on Ingenuity operations. Now, the helicopter is ready for its final act, to serve as a stationary science platform, collecting data that could benefit future explorers to the Red Planet. Ingenuity arrived on Mars, attached to the underbelly of the car-sized six-wheeled Mars Perseverance rover on February the 18th, 2021. It was originally designed simply as a short-lived technology demonstrator mission using a lot of off-the-shelf components. The idea was to attempt to perform up to 5 experimental test flights over 30 days, in the process proving that a small rotocopter could undertake powered flight in the skies of another world. Of course, as we all know now, Ingenuity far exceeded its mission parameters. It lasted for over 1,000 Martian days, undertook some 72 flights, logging more than 2 hours of flight time. It quickly progressed from being simply a test vehicle to providing support for the Perseverance rover, scouting the terrain ahead, looking for the best path through, and spotting interesting geology. However, the mission came to an abrupt end when the helicopter experienced a hard landing on its last flight, significantly damaging one rotor blade and tearing another off the spindle completely. Unable to fly, the rotorcopter will remain stationary at Valinor Hills, while the Perseverance rover continues with its mission, driving out of communications range as it continues to explore the western limb of Jezero Crater. The final communication stream confirmed that a software update previously beamed up to Ingenuity was operating as expected. This new software contains commands that direct the helicopter to continue collecting data well after communications with the rover have ceased. With the software patch in place, Ingenuity will wake up daily, activate its flight computers, and test the performance of its solar panel, its batteries, and its electronic equipment. It'll then take a picture of the surface with its color camera, and it will collect temperature data from its sensors placed around the aircraft. Ingenuity engineers and scientists believe such long-term data collection could not only benefit future designers of aircraft and other vehicles for the Red Planet, but could also provide a long-term perspective on Martian weather patterns and dust movement. If a critical component of Ingenuity were to fail in the future, causing data collection to stop, or if the helicopter eventually loses power because of dust accumulation on its solar panel, whatever information Ingenuity has collected remains stored on board. Mission managers believe Ingenuity's memory could potentially hold up to 20 years' worth of daily data. And whenever humanity revisits Valinor Hills, either with a rover or a new aircraft, or when future astronauts walk there, Ingenuity will be waiting there with her last gift of data. A final testament to the reason why humans dare to try mighty things. This report from NASA TV.
And liftoff, launching the next generation of robotic explorers to the Red Planet.
We'd made it through launch, cruise, EDL, all of that, and we were ready now to begin our real mission, our real life on Mars. And we were all excited to see what Ingenuity could really do. We were ready for flight one.
Earlier today, Ingenuity should have autonomously performed its first flight attempt on Mars.
We're all holding our breath.
Ingenuity's reporting. Altimeter data confirms that Ingenuity has performed its first flight of a powered aircraft on another planet.
At that point, you just open the floodgates of what is possible.
Yeah, it was surreal.
That was the crowning achievement of the team.
You know, we really had to hold hands and do it together.
From that moment forward, really, we were off to the races and saying, okay, great, that's done. Let's get back to work. Let's get to flight two, and then three, and then so on and so on. How fast can we fly? How high up above the surface can we fly? We started doing things in parallel with the rover, and we've also demonstrated that the helicopter can be a scout to help scientists. It's been a remarkable journey, and I think a highlight of all of our lives to have been a part of it.
Of course, there's a little sadness that, oh no, it's over. It's kind of like the end of an era, but it's also the beginning of an era.
To realize, you know, what you're part of here, at least for me, I kind of get goosebumps.
We hope that Ingenuity will inspire teams to build larger, more capable vehicles. From a science perspective, what is interesting now that we've unlocked that aerial dimension?
You know, you never want to see it end.
Okay. Into the camera.
I watched the first moon landing and felt privileged. And now I get to see a helicopter scanning Mars landscape. Thank you, Ingenuity and team.
That's such a wonderful thought.
Ingenuity, you danced in Martian skies, a testament to human brilliance. Your legacy inspires us. Farewell, dear friend.
Oh, it's a very beautiful sentiment. And as a dancer myself, I couldn't have said it any more perfectly.
Anything is possible when a group of dedicated people work together. Very true.
Congratulations on a successful mission and for making history.
I have tremendous gratitude to be a part of that.
That's really sweet. It's tapped into many people's imaginations. It's inspired all of us.
That's going to be the legacy of Ingenuity.
The best way to predict the future is to create it.
This is Space Time. Still to come, South Korea launches a new spy satellite to keep an eye on what Pyongyang's up to. And later in the science report, the Great Barrier Reef going through yet another bleaching event due to climate change. All that and more still to come on Space Time. South Korea has launched its second domestically made spy satellite into orbit. The new bird was flown aboard a Falcon 9 rocket from the Kennedy Space Center at Cape Canaveral in Florida. The new military reconnaissance satellite will provide Seoul with independent intelligence surveillance focusing on the activities of Pyongyang. South Korea launched its first military spy satellite last December, also aboard a Falcon 9. It's already transmitted its first high-resolution images of central Pyongyang and is expected to commence its full mission in June. These latest launches are intensifying the growing space race on the Korean Peninsula, with North Korea having launched its first military spy satellite in November with technical aid from Russia in return for weapons for use in Moscow's war against Ukraine. It was Pyongyang's third launch attempt after two earlier rockets failed, one last May and the other in August last year. Seoul's currently planning to launch a total of five military spy satellites by 2025 to better monitor the North in all parameters. Once all five enter orbit, the South Korean military will have the capability to monitor key facilities in North Korea using data updated every 2 hours. This is Space Time. Time now to take another brief look at some of the other stories making news in science this week with the Science Report. America's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, together with the International Coral Reef Initiative, have confirmed that a fifth coral bleaching event is now underway on the Great Barrier Reef. The new findings show that the reef's experiencing the highest level of heat stress ever recorded, including bleaching and mortality at previously unaffected locations. The data shows that 90% of atmospheric heat being absorbed by the oceans has been causing average global sea surface temperatures to break records every day for more than a year. The Great Barrier Reef has now experienced five mass coral bleaching events over the past 9 years. Tropical reefs take years to recover from a mass bleaching event, and species simply don't have enough time to recover in that time period. That means what's happening now will fundamentally change the reef and its biodiversity. As well as hitting the Great Barrier Reef for a fifth time, the latest bleaching event has caused four planet-wide mass bleaching events. Last month was Earth's warmest March in NOAA's 175-year global climate record. So far, record warm temperatures have covered 10.8% of the world's surface this month, and there were no areas of record cold temperatures. Paleontologists have described three unusually new species of giant fossilized kangaroos from Australia and New Guinea. The findings, reported in the journal Megataxa, suggest they're more diverse in shape, range, and hopping method than previously thought. The three new species are of the extinct genus Protemnodon, which lived from around 5 million to 40,000 years ago, with one about double the size of the largest bred kangaroos living today. Multiple complete fossilized kangaroo skeletons of the creatures were found at Lake Calabona in arid South Australia in 2013, 2018, and 2019. Following 3 years of intensive research, scientists have compiled the first ever World Cybercrime Index. The index identifies the globe's key cybercrime hotspots by ranking the most significant sources of cybercrime at a national level. The findings, reported in the journal PLOS ONE, shows that a relatively small number of countries house the greatest cybercriminal threats. Russia tops the list of cybercriminals, followed closely by the Ukraine, China, the United States, Nigeria, and Romania. Australia ranks at number 34. Chipmaker AMD has just launched its new AI-enhanced chips for business laptops and desktop computers with nearly 50% faster performance than Intel's best chips. With the details, we're joined by technology editor Alex Haravroit from TechAdvice.life.
AMD was the first to launch a chip with AI brains inside of it. That was the 7040 last year. And then late last year, they announced their successors. Now, they've launched those, and they now have the first business AI PC. So there's the 8000G series for desktops and the 8040 series for laptops. And this has a dedicated AI engine inside, which is the first PC chip to do that. Now, Intel has also launched their Intel Core Ultra processors, which have an AI brain inside as well. So if you're going to buy a new PC, make sure you get one that has one of these AI engines inside, because what you'll be able to do is do a lot of the stuff you do with ChatGPT, but locally on your own device. So whether that's asking various questions, getting it to help you write emails, do presentations, do Word documents, summarize documents, transcribe things for you, be able to do that on device as opposed to sending it to ChatGPT, having it travel across the internet, be worked on somebody else's server, be training that AI system, which it could then, you know, use that information in responses it gives to other people, even if they promise not to do that, and then send it back to you. So being able to do that locally is a huge thing, and AMD is beating Intel at being able to offer this to consumers, although Intel has caught up. If you want to know more, you can read about it at my website, techadvice.life. I've got an article about those new processors. And again, don't buy a new PC without the AI component inside it.
Now, while we're mentioning ChatGPT, there's another article out about how woke it's become. It seems to be supporting one side of politics and not the other. And you can't get much more woke than that.
Yes, well, there was a post on X about how if you ask the ChatGPT about Biden, it doesn't mention any of the scandals that Biden's been involved in. But if you ask it about Trump, it lists all sorts of scandals, which of course have been mostly all thoroughly debunked. Now, if you ask Grok, it does list all of the different scandals that Biden has been involved in, and which, you know, he still hasn't faced any charges or electoral wrath for. Now, the problem is here that it's garbage in, garbage out. I mean, the programming that the AIs have received dictates what it delivers as a result. And this is where open source large language models that you can determine what is being programmed into it are going to be crucial for the future, for privacy, for security, and also being able to run these locally on your own device. But at the moment, you still need to have a big data center with multiple of these AI accelerator chips within to be able to generate things quickly and do the job very fast. But your phones, your tablets, and your PCs are now coming with AI chips built in. They're still obviously not as powerful as the NVIDIA H100 or the AMD Instinct MI300X chip, which those are used in configurations of multiple chips in service and data centers, but it's catching up.
Samsung is just taking the top spot in smartphone sales for the first 3 months of 2024. Apple's off the top of the charts.
Yes, well, Apple actually was at the top of the charts last year in the last quarter of 2023, and that's because Apple launched their new iPhone at the time. And of course, there's a big rush for people who are upgrading either from the last year's model or normally from several models before it. But Samsung is back at the top. And the issue here, though, is that Samsung, whilst they do sell more of their flagship S series and the folding series smartphones every year than the year before, the bulk of their sales come from their mid-range. Now, they have this A series of smartphones headlined at the moment by the A35. They don't have the AI smarts of the Galaxy S flagship series, but they're well under $1,000. And they don't make as much money as an iPhone makes. Even the cheapest iPhone makes Apple a good amount of profit, which it uses to remain the world's top tech company and have all those incredible stores and come out with AI enhancements to their chips on a very regular basis.
We're phasing out 3G. It'll be gone by the end of this year, I believe. 4G is going to be with us for a little while longer. 5G is all the rage now, but 6G is already starting to make its presence felt.
Yes, we're about halfway through the 5G era. We did see early versions of 5G in 2018. I think the Koreans had the Olympics at the time.
That's right.
And even Telstra in Australia had initial work on 5G, but really it kicked off around 2020. That's when the smartphones started offering 5G in mass as well. And we're about halfway there. Now, 6G is probably not going to really emerge until 2028, 2029. But again, it'll be about 2030 when we really see it taking off and being installed. And they're talking about a 100 gigabit speed. 100 gigabits is 100,000 megabits, or 1,000 times faster than the 100 megabits connections that many people have, and 100 times faster than the gigabit connections that some people around the world have too. Now, that's a theoretical maximum. The theoretical max for 5G is about 4.9 gigabits per second, but most people are getting anywhere from 50 to around 600 megabits, depending on how close they are to a tower. So again, we're playing the game of theoretical maximums, but look, if we can start getting reliably, you know, 1 gigabit plus on our phones, I mean, that is super fast. I mean, you'll download download an entire movie in, well, it'll be a few seconds, but not the, you know, several minutes that it can take now. So 6G is still at least half a decade away, but a few companies in Japan have made a prototype device. It's operating only at about 100 meters of distance. So there's a long way to go before it can go for kilometers like 3G, 4G, and 5G can. And until they fix that, they're either going to have to put up a lot more towers, and people are not big fans of towers near them. But look, again, we're 5 years away at least from our phones having 6G, but they're definitely working on it. And 7G, 8G, 9G, it's all coming after that.
That's Alex Zaharov-Royd from TechAdvice.life. That's the show for now. Spacetime is available every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday through Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, Acast, Amazon Music, Bytes.com, SoundCloud, YouTube, your favorite podcast download provider, and from SpacetimeWithStuartGary.com. Spacetime's also broadcast through the National Science Foundation on Science Zone Radio and on both iHeartRadio and TuneIn Radio. And you can help to support our show by visiting the Spacetime store for a range of promotional merchandising goodies, or by becoming a Spacetime patron, which gives you access to triple episode commercial-free versions of the show, as well as lots of bonus audio content which doesn't go to air, access to our exclusive Facebook group, and other rewards. Just go to spacetimewithstuartgary.com for full details. And if you want more Space Time, please check out our blog, where you'll find all the stuff we couldn't fit in the show, as well as heaps of images, news stories, loads of videos, and things on the web I find interesting or amusing. Just go to spacetimewithstuartgary.tumblr.com. That's all one word, and that's Tumblr without the E. You can also follow us through @StuartGary on Twitter, @SpaceTimeWithStuartGary on Instagram, through our Spacetime YouTube channel, and on Facebook, just go to facebook.com/SpaceTimeWithStuartGary.
You've been listening to Spacetime with Stuart Gary. This has been another quality podcast production from Bytes.com.